Welcome to Accessibility Craft, where we explore the complex challenges and emerging trends that are shaping digital accessibility while sipping on unique craft beverages. This show is proudly produced by Equalize Digital, the most trusted name in WordPress accessibility. Join us every week as we break down accessibility news and share the expert strategies we've used to help make millions of websites more accessible. Grab a drink. The show starts now.
Welcome to WordPress Accessibility Meetup, making digital documents accessible, practical steps for inclusive design with Samantha Merritt, who is a senior accessibility specialist at the Ministry of Justice in the UK. We do have a sponsor that I want to thank today, and that is GoDaddy. They are covering the cost of our live captioning. And actually, it doesn't say this on the slide, but they are also going to be covering the cost of transcription, which we very much appreciate after the fact to make sure we have corrected captions on our videos. GoDaddy's mission is to empower a worldwide community of entrepreneurs by giving them all the help and tools they need to grow online, including a simpler, safer WordPress experience. GoDaddy provides a managed WordPress experience that is as easy as it is effective. The latest version of WordPress comes pre-installed with exclusive themes, plugins, and tools to get you up and running quickly with automated backups, updates, and malware removal so that their pros can spend less time on monotonous maintenance and more time building their businesses. You can learn more about GoDaddy if you go to GoDaddy.com. We always encourage folks, no matter where you are on social media, if you are willing to go on whatever that platform is and tweet or post or comment, however it works on that platform, and just give them a quick shout out and say thank you for covering the cost of captioning for WordPress Accessibility Meetup, that helps to tell them that this is an important sponsorship and that attendees value the accessibility support and makes them want to continue to sponsor us. So if you are willing to do that and give them a short shout out, we would very much appreciate that. I am very excited to introduce Samantha Merritt. Samantha is a senior accessibility specialist at the Ministry of Justice, where she leads strategic initiatives to embed accessibility across digital services. She has over 7 years of experience championing accessible documents and inclusive design. Samantha has developed cross-government training programs, creating hands-on learning spaces like the MOJ Accessibility Bar, and co-organizes the Document Accessibility Community of Practice, a network spanning 65-plus public sector organizations. Samantha is CPAC certified and passionate about moving accessibility beyond compliance by fostering empathy-driven experiences. Samantha has presented at major conferences, including WordPress Accessibility Day and the MOJ Digital Accessibility Conference, and regularly collaborates with government teams to improve accessibility standards and capabilities. Welcome, Samantha. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to share my screen before I get going.
While you're doing that, I'll just give a quick note to everyone that there is a Q&A module available in Zoom. If you want to put any questions that you have in the Q&A, then at the end of the presentation, I'll come back on and ask those to Samantha.
Lovely. Thank you very much. Hopefully that is showing for everybody. So welcome. It is 4 o'clock in the afternoon for me, but I appreciate it's probably all different times for people across the world. But hello, everybody, and thank you for joining this session. I was very excited to be part of one of Equalize Digital's meetups. So hopefully you will get something out of today because it's all about creating accessible documents. So just an agenda for the session, and I'll do a little bit of housekeeping and then we will dive straight in because we want to utilize every minute that we have together today. The agenda for the session is, I'm going to start off by talking about why accessible documents matter. I think, web is very much well understood, and we often talk a lot about remediation of web pages and auditing, all really important and should definitely be considered. Sometimes documents get slightly sidelined, so that's why we're going to talk about why that shouldn't be the case before we dive into how to choose the right document format, which is really, really important and really helpful when you're trying to create an accessible document. Then I will give you some practical tips about creating accessible documents in all sorts of software. So hopefully you can go away and maybe use some of them today, or you're just going to be reminded that they exist. And then we'll end on talk about building that into maybe a workflow, or how in your role, whatever that might be in your workspace, how you can build some of these tips into your everyday work, which might be helpful. So I hope something I provide today will be something you take away and embed in your role later today or even tomorrow. I won't bother talking about who I am today because Amber did an amazing job of doing that for me, but just as a visual description for anyone who might benefit from that. So I'm a woman in her 20s. I've got blonde hair, which is in a ponytail today, and I'm wearing a pair of glasses. And as Amber said, I'm a senior accessibility specialist. I work at the Ministry of Justice in the UK. So I am going to visually describe everything on my slides today. So there's nothing on this slide that you won't get via my voice. But you can also have copies of this if you need to after the session, which I can send out with any top tips as well. And you're always more than welcome to get in touch with me after the session. So let's dive straight in and let's start with the important topic, really, which is, why am I here today talking to you about this topic in general? Why do accessible documents matter? So to start off, we're going to have a quick look at what that means when we're talking about choosing accessible documents and making sure we're building them correctly. What is an accessible document, if I was going to define it? So on the slide, I've included, I should have said at the start in my presentation, a few pictures of dogs all the way through. I own a lovely dog myself who's currently snoring away on the chair next to me. And so I couldn't put a presentation together without putting a little bit of doggy love in there too. So I will visually describe all of the pictures in my presentation so we can all enjoy them together. But on this first slide is my first dog picture, and it's a pug sitting down with his head tilted to one side. It's sitting in front of a blackboard and it's got lots of question marks all over it because it's asking for an answer to this question. So for me, defining an accessible document is a document that allows as many people as possible to access and use that information. If you've ever tried to make a document accessible, it may feel somewhat tedious. It might feel like there's a huge checklist of items and you're not sure where to start or what tool might be best to help you. But it's important to keep in mind that the effort that you're putting in is really, really worth it, and it will produce a really accessible outcome for your users. At the end of the day, why are we creating something or writing something if we don't want it to be read by the users that we're creating it for? It would be pointless and waste of our time. So I've got a couple of questions for you when it comes to thinking about why does document accessibility matter? So I'm not going to ask the group or put things in the chat. We're just going to think about this in our own minds. But true or false, quite simply, do you think that one inaccessible PDF can break an entire user journey? So it's true or false? I'll give everyone a couple of seconds to have a think about that. And I'm hoping the first answer that popped into your head was true, because that was what I was looking for. From my own experience of working with colleagues across government and in justice, we sometimes think, oh, it's only one PDF. No one really is going to use it. It's just our terms and conditions, or it's just the rules and guidance on how to use our system. I think actually someone is probably going to use that, and that's probably quite a critical document for them to be able to understand your service. So that one inaccessible PDF could actually be quite difficult for a user to understand and interpret if they really need to. So it's really important that we make that accessible. It's great that your service is fully accessible, but actually that PDF might be equally as needed. And then I get asked the question, so what is actually required by law? Is it just the website needs to be accessible, the service, right? I don't need to worry about the documents. Or is it really both of them?
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizedigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
My answer is always, of course, both need to be accessible. You need an accessible service or product or website, and you also need accessible documents on that product or embedded in that website. And it's really important that you think about that as well. They are often an afterthought. They're often something we pull together maybe at the end once we've created something, but actually they are just as important as the service itself. So we like to bust some myths when we're working with colleagues here at the Ministry of Justice, and just in general when I'm talking to people about document accessibility and why it's really important. Essentially, as we've said, having an accessible document helps everybody have access to the same information, hopefully at the same time, which builds that kind of inclusive society. There's a projection for the number of adults to outweigh children for the first time in history by 2034. So inclusion and accessibility is going to become really, really important in our everyday lives. It's also kind of expected that future iterations of the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, the WCAG 3.0, will very much include document accessibility. So it's really important that we're kind of getting ready for that change and understanding what that will mean. And for me, working in the UK in a public sector organisation, it's very much the law for us as well, and we can't forget that. And so making sure document accessibility is front and centre is kind of really, really important for us, and I'm sure many of us on the call today as well. So I got a quote when I was building some training materials. I was speaking to colleagues and users who kind of have to grapple with inaccessible documents every day in their everyday role. And I asked them, just tell me, what do you think of that? How does it make you feel? And one of my colleagues said, document accessibility is essential for me to be able to do my job. Constantly having to deal with inaccessible documents has a negative impact on my mental health. Think of the countless days wasted trying to grapple with poorly designed documents, or the talent and skills we lose because people just can't do their jobs properly. And I love that quote, and I always use it because I think it's really powerful for people to understand the impact that inaccessible documents and content in general can have on not only external users or customers that we're providing for, but also the people that we work with on an everyday basis. We produce a survey inside our organisation, and we ask colleagues, how does it make you feel when you come across inaccessible documents at work? People were really forthcoming with their thoughts and their feelings, which I was really, really grateful for, because it helped us understand kind of some common themes and kind of what impact this can have on people. There was things like health conditions. So, you know, inaccessible documents can cause people to feel really quite fatigued, and they can get headaches and eye strain. Emotionally, they felt frustrated, like really angry and sad and overwhelmed because they just couldn't understand the information or get into it with their assistive technology. And then professionally, they would have to delay tasks. They might lose focus or just abandon tasks altogether because it was just never going to be possible. If they can't understand that document, they just can't do their job properly. And that has a real big impact on people. And actually, it's a relatively simple thing to solve if we just start creating accessible documents. But you've all joined this course today because I assume you all care a little bit about accessibility and you're kind of hungry to learn a little bit more. So enough about why you should care about it, because I think you're probably all on my page when we're talking about why. Let's think about how. So we're going to start off by thinking about the right format choice. And you might think that's obvious, but it's not always that obvious. Format has a really big impact on the final accessible output, because you could create a fully accessible document and then you convert it to something that's inaccessible, or you publish it in a way that is inaccessible. So for example, in our organization, we create a lot of presentations very similar to the one I'm sharing with you today. What somebody could do with this presentation is then export it to a PDF format, not do any of the accessibility work, and publish it. The PowerPoint itself might be quite accessible. They might have built in all the kind of things we're going to talk about today. But by converting it to PDF and just clicking Save As and PDF, or even worse, printing to PDF. They're actually undoing a lot of the good work they've done, and it will make that final format very inaccessible. So it's important to think about that when we're choosing the right format choice. So it's very important. And as the meme on this slide suggests, which is Woody and Buzz from Toy Story, and the words read, bad choices everywhere. There are bad choices everywhere, but there are also good choices. And when you're making that choice, I tend to tell people, ask yourself the following questions. Who's going to use it? How are they going to use your document? And how are you going to share it? Now that answer might always be the same if you're always producing content in a similar way for a similar user group. Or it might be very different every single time you're creating something. So it's important to always ask yourself that question so you can just double check that you are using the right document format. In today's presentation, I'm going to talk about spreadsheets. I'm going to talk about Word documents or process documents in general, PowerPoint presentations or presentations you might create in any kind of presenting software, PDFs and web pages. Of course, there are a lot of other document format choices, but for me, when the work that I do and the kind of work I've seen others are doing, these are kind of the most common document format types that we use. I'll also put a slight disclaimer out that a lot of the tips and some of the screenshots and things I'm going to explain are done on Microsoft products because that is what we use internally here within the UK Ministry of Justice. But actually, a lot of the advice applies to all software types, and hopefully you can take what I'm using today and apply that to things like Google Docs or LibreOffice. The tips should be software agnostic, no matter what you're using. But just bear that in mind when I'm kind of showing screenshots and things, if that's what you're going to base some of your guidance off of. So presentations then, PowerPoint presentations, whatever presentation you're using. PowerPoint presentations and presentations in general should be used to convey a story or a message. I've got a dog meme on this slide. The dog looks quite intense. Its eyes really, really close to the camera, and the words say, "I have my eye on you." The reason the dog looks so intense is because I would say for me and my experience working with colleagues, PowerPoint and presentations are one of the most misused format types. It should primarily be used for presentations that tell a story. They're quite a visual tool most of the time, but the presenter should be the main focus of any kind of presentation. The slides are there as a resource and or a backup. What they shouldn't be used for are projects or reports. And we always say to people, please do not make a presentation and export it to PDF. It is very difficult to make it accessible, and you're making it very hard work for yourself when there's a lot of other format choices you could use for that kind of content. Moving on to Excel or kind of a data sheet in general, any kind of spreadsheet software. Again, this one's more self-explanatory and people tend to use this one, right? It's for storing and analysing data and reporting on large amounts of data. So you might use it for budget sheets, attendance reports, balance sheets, any kind of thing like that. What we shouldn't use spreadsheets for is writing lots of text, and it's not ideal for any kind of like project management or forms or anything like that. Again, there are better format types for that kind of thing. What format type, you might ask? Well, most of the time, Word or any kind of word processing software is going to be your best option. We have a little bit of a saying that we tend to inform colleagues of within Justice, and that is, if it's made in Word, it can stay in Word. If you're in doubt about what format you should choose, or you're not quite sure where best it sits, stick it in some kind of Word document. And then afterwards, you can convert it out to something else if you decide it's better suited to a different format. Any kind of word processing is great because it's easy to make the information more accessible. If you are ever going to move to the dreaded PDF option, it is the best for converting to PDF. It tends to be the most compatible for sort of wide range of assistive technology. And it can be quite personalized by users, so they can change colors, size, text, which they can, and all the others as well, but Word tends to be the easiest one to do that in. So again, that's why we tend to default to Word if we're in doubt of where we probably, what format we should be using, depending on the scenario. Understood, that's not the end of your options. There are various other options. Think web page first, if you can. So if you're publishing information online, do you need to add an attachment? Or could you just put the information directly onto a web page? Really, you're asking yourself the question, do I really need this document? The same applies if you're sending emails. Do you always have to attach a file? Or could you just copy that information into the email instead? Admittedly, that's not always going to work. A lot of the time, that makes the emails quite long and lengthy, and it's just not going to work right. That's fine, but as long as you've considered whether attachment is needed or not, you're making the right step, and then you can make the right choice afterwards. You might have noticed I purposefully didn't talk about PDFs because they're a little bit of a bugbear of mine, I must admit. So should we create a PDF is the question. And the simple answer would be no. Another dog meme, I've got kind of a mastiff puppy with its paw held up to the camera and the words read, "How about no?" written across the top. A little bit sassy, maybe. But we tend to advise teams to publish in HTML wherever possible. So users can use their own custom browse settings and make adaptations to that content where they need to. It also means that as content owners, we can easily update that information because all we've got to do is find that web page or that HTML page rather than having to go, who owns that PDF? Who saw that last? Who's got that saved? Oh, they've left now, so we'll have to start all over again. And that can sometimes be quite frustrating. Also, from an assistive technology point of view, we've had user testimonies that say things similar to the following. I always open a PDF with trepidation because more than half the time, trying to read one with my assistive technology is a frustrating experience. So users already have that feeling before they've even opened up the document or even attempted to. So I tend to try and avoid them where I can to stop other users having that feeling when they receive content from me. It's not always possible, but where I can, I avoid a PDF. Why do people come back to me and say, why? I like a PDF. We've always done it in PDF format, so why do we have to stop now? The problem with a PDF is they're not designed to be flexible in their layout and they can cause problems for assistive tech users as a result. As the dog meme on this slide, which features a bulldog type looking dog with its chin on the floor, looking quite unhappy, saying, oh, look, another PDF file. Some of the myths I hear about PDFs is they can't be accessible, they can't be edited, they should never be used, and they never work with screen readers. They're all myths. They can be made accessible. They can be edited if you've got the right software. We can use them if we need to in the right circumstance. And they can work with screen readers if we make sure that we've done the accessibility work on them. But that's a lot of cans and ifs. That's if the knowledge is there, if we have the right software. So we tend just to avoid all of those myths and all of those ifs and just act on what we know. And we can teach people how to make accessible Word documents, publish accessible HTML content, a lot easier than we can teach someone about a PDF tagging tree. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that at the end of the presentation because I can't not talk about PDFs, but we don't dwell on it and we tend to try and avoid them where we can. But again, we do our best, but it's not perfect. So that is formats. That is kind of different types of document formats and they're the kind of the main ones I'm going to cover today. So my next part of the presentation is kind of split into four parts. And I'm going to take you through some top tips for Word documents or any kind of word processing doc, any kind of presentation that you might be creating, any kind of spreadsheet you're pulling together. And then we're going to end on a few tips on PDFs. I'm keeping it brief on purpose, but if anybody wants to know more, you can always reach out to me. I am happy to talk about PDFs, even if I don't like them very much. So we're going to start by talking about wonderful Word documents. And again, I've talking about some of the things I'm going to talk about are about the Microsoft suite here. But again, I'm sure these are applied across the software suite, no matter what you're using. If you're going to talk about any kind of document accessibility, regardless of what you're creating, headings are so, so important. Headings are the backbone of any document or any kind of content that you might create. A user should be able to scan your content or your document using just your headings and get a really comprehensive overview of that page content. Headings structure that information by splitting it into different sections. So they can help people find information quickly, regardless of how they're accessing that information. So via a screen reader with voice recognition or reading the information on the screen. So make sure your headings are descriptive and make sure they're understandable on their own. Let your heading text tell the story about the contents of that page. So all readers will benefit from a well-structured document, and headings are a massive, massive part of that. So make sure you're using them when you're creating any kind of content. Again, if you are working in any kind of word processing document and you're using the styled headings that are provided for you, so your heading ones, your heading twos, normally in a styles pane somewhere that you can format, the first heading in your document should always be your heading one. That's your main heading. It's sometimes referred to as title, but in Word, don't get those two confused. Your first heading in your document should always be your heading one. Subsections, subheadings will be heading two and so on. There's heading three and four. You're looking to create a nice solid hierarchy. When I talk about this, I often talk about it in terms of like Russian dolls. I always think about the first one is your heading one. Inside that, you have your heading two. Then you get your heading three. You can go all the way down to five and six if you really want to. I wouldn't necessarily advise it. It makes structure quite complex. But if you need to, they're there to use. But if you think about them as Russian dolls, and every time you start a new section, you go back to that big one at the start and you start going down again. It's helpful to think of them like that because you can't stop and skip at a heading level. You have to open up each doll to get to the one inside. And heading levels are very similar. You can't skip one and get the little one inside it unless you open them all up. So it's helpful to think about them in that way. Just be careful of using like preset styles. Just make sure they are accessible. Some of the preset styles we see are like using light fonts with awful contrast. So just make your own styles if you need to, make sure they've got the appropriate contrast and maybe bold styling if that's appropriate. The other thing to say about structure is tables. So headings are really, really important, and tables are pretty high up that list as well. Tables are a really useful tool for kind of organizing any type of data. They can make it nice and easy to read, and they can make comparisons between data sets. However, to make a table accessible, you have to ensure that you've considered the kind of four bullet points that I have on this slide. And I've got the first one says, identify the header row. So make sure somewhere in your table, it doesn't have to necessarily be a header row, it could be a header column. I think most commonly in table structure, you will have a header row, it's just natural. But you might not, and maybe a header column is more applicable. As long as you've identified a row or column as your header, you've helped to make that table more accessible. Also, if you have a table that's going to span across maybe two pages or maybe even more than that, don't let your rows break across pages. So don't let, for example, if you've got one row of a table, don't let some of the information sit on one page and the rest of it sit on the other. Make sure that row travels as a group and it comes together. So that's a really important point to make as well. Don't split or merge cells. Just don't do it. It makes the content quite difficult to navigate sometimes. So just make sure you've got a really nice regular table with equal numbers of rows to columns, etc. Give your table a title. Make sure you've made it descriptive. Tell people what that table is about and what it's showing. Even if that title just says table of contents, that's all you need to write if that's what it is. Just make sure you're making it really clear. Also, you can add alternative text to a table. So just a short sentence of text to say, this table shows X, or you can pull out some of the most important information, whatever you think would be most useful context for a user to have about that table, that's what should go into your text. And finally, I always say to people, check you can tab through in a logical order. Check that you can go from top to bottom in your table and you're tabbing in a way and you're reading that information in a way that makes sense. Then you can kind of guarantee you've structured a table in an accessible way. What's my biggest no when it comes to tables? And trust me, I've seen it. Do not add tables as images. I've seen people screenshot a table and paste it into a document. I'm sure everybody on this call already can see the issue with that. It's not very accessible at all. I challenge someone to write me a sentence of text or alternative text that describes a picture of a table. It's going to be quite tricky. Tables have got a lot of data in them. So it's really, really difficult to make, it's pretty much impossible to make a picture of a table fully accessible. So just make sure you're adding them as raw tables that you can navigate through. Where can you build all that in? How can you add all of that? Well, regardless of what software program you're using, there should be a tables property dialog box of some kind if you write select your table. There, in there, you'll be able to select to make sure your row doesn't break across pages. Select your header row, add your title, add your alternative text. And that way you can make sure you're adding all your elements in really quite a simple way, just using your tables properties box. It takes a little bit of time to add all that information in, but once you've added it in, you set your table up quite nicely to be accessible. On the theme of kind of shapes and tables, we're going to talk a little bit about text boxes and shapes. So shapes are often used as quite a visual tool to like enhance the layout of appearance of text on a page, maybe. So like you've got something that says like important notice and you put it in a red box because you think that makes it stand out. Content in shapes is not often read aloud by screen reader users. So screen readers can't always navigate into those shapes and make that content visible or understood. So we tend to tell our users and our colleagues that we work with to avoid using kind of text boxes and shapes. It adds extra load because then you have to add alternative text and it kind of defeats the object of using that shape in the first place. Instead, we tend to encourage colleagues to add borders around text because that means the text is accessible to all users. It's just text on a page with a nice border around it. But it also makes sure that text will stand out if you want it to also be visually appear kind of enhanced on the page for whatever reason. We also tell people it's all well and good to make sure it's visually enhanced on the page, but also make sure the text tells that same story. So make sure your text says important note or please note or something along those lines to make it really, really clear that that text is also really important for anybody who might be listening to it. On a similar note, we're going to talk about images and alt text. It's really important, right? I think no matter whatever you're talking about in accessibility, alternative text will always come up because it's really, really important when it comes to making sure that your images are described in a way that can be understood by everybody. So I've got a couple of examples on the next slide of kind of good, bad, and maybe okay alternative text and kind of how we tend to use it with our colleagues at the MOJ. But when it comes to adding alt text, just make sure you're making it short and concise, but meaningful. The text should describe the meaning of any kind of non-text content so that people might not perceive it or understand it otherwise. Only tell the user what they need to know. Don't overload them with other stuff that isn't really that important. And make sure it's relevant for the context that you're using it in. So sometimes I'll have colleagues write great alternative text, really detailed, really lovely, but really not that relevant to what they're talking about. So really as a user, I'm getting more information than I really need. And actually that's kind of a bit of cognitive overload then. So just making sure that what we're writing is really relevant and concise to what we're talking about and the context in which we're talking about it in. So good, bad, and ugly alt text. Images can make you feel a particular way, and that's a lot of the time probably why we use them. And that's something that should be made available to a screen reader user or any user who might not be viewing the images in a kind of on the web page or in a document as normal. So on the slide, on the picture on the slide is a Great Dane with kind of a wild look catching a treat midair with its mouth wide open. So an example of bad alternative text would be something along the lines of image342.jpg. That often happens when we don't add alternative text and the automated software just picks up the file name, for example, and sticks that in that field. That doesn't give the user any information. It's completely useless and we might have just left it blank because it gives me no information. An example of like maybe okay, alternative text would be like dog with its mouth wide open. It describes the basics, but it doesn't really give any much more detail than that. So I might be able to work out why the image has been used based on the context, but I could do better. But good alternative text would be something like I started this section off with. A great dane with its mouth wide open, lips flopping open, catching a treat midair. Because for me, this image is more than just about a dog catching a treat. The dog looks a little bit wild. The picture is supposed to be slightly comical, I think. Well, that's the emotion I get from the picture, and that's why I wanted to communicate that in my alt text. The image expresses a particular tone, and that really matters. So it should really go in the alt text, which is why I kind of put the word wild in there in my original example as well, because I think that kind of adds to that comical effect. And then finishing off with formatting link text. So I have a grumpy looking dog on this slide with very, very wild hair. And this is how I often feel when I review documents that have inaccessible link text. Many a time do I read content when all the links say, read more information, click here, select here for more information. They're useless. In the same way, given the full URL is really helpful, you need to make sure that your links are meaningful in what they say and that they're descriptive. Users can bring up a list of links as a really good navigational tool, but it's only a good navigational tool if we're actually making sure the text is descriptive and helpful. So just making sure that when you're using links in your documents, that they are descriptive. And don't forget, I've got a dog image, a black lab with big brown eyes, looking at the camera with the words, "Don't forget me." So what shouldn't we forget? We shouldn't forget about designing a document for neurodiversity. It's often overlooked, but spoken a lot about screen readers, and that's really important. It really is. But it's important to design in other ways as well. So plain English, make sure we're thinking about that. We're using clear language, accessible fonts. We're not using italics and underline all of the time or at all really in most of our content. We're checking our colours. We're checking that they've got good contrast. We're consistent in the way that we're formatting things. These all matter. And just because I haven't pulled them out today as top tips doesn't mean they matter any less. It's just I've got a finite time to kind of give you some information today. So I've chosen to put them on one slide. But just keep those things in mind as well. Don't forget about those when you're pulling your content together, finishing off your documents. Moving into polished presentations, or what should you think about when you're pulling together a presentation? Again, most presentation software has some kind of master slide or slide master. Slide masters are so important. They create an accessible layout for your slides, and they really help to ensure consistency. When you create a slide deck using the slide master, and then you decide, do you know what? Don't like that blue background. I want to put a purple background on, which I'm not sure about your color contrast, but we'll put that one aside for a moment. If you do that in the master layout, every slide in your presentation will change with you, rather than you having to click on every slide or do it in a more manual way. Slide master helps to create that consistency. It also helps with adding slide headings and things like that, and making sure things are scaled in the right way. So using your master slide or slide master is really, really important. So try and use that if you're creating a slide deck. If you have a presentation with kind of lots of slides, sections are a really nice way to structure it. So if you're including several different topics, so my presentation today, I had a kind of an intro, I've got Word presentation, I'm talking about spreadsheets next. It's got sections in there to help provide structure to my presentation. It's nice when people are reading the presentation outside of maybe the main meeting. They've got that structure there to help them understand what's included in that presentation. They're not a necessity, but they're definitely nice to have for longer presentations. These are a necessity though, and these are unique slide titles. So you must have, unique is the key word here, descriptive titles on each slide. Even if they aren't visible, although that's not really that advisable, it's always good to have visible slide titles, but if you want to hide them off the slide, you can do that. Just make sure they're unique. So we never repeat a slide title. Even if we have multiple slides with the same information or continued information. So I don't know, you've got two slides about resources. Each slide needs to be numbered so that you're making them unique, even if they've just a more, just another slide about more resources. Make sure that's written in the slide title. Don't repeat your title. Again, this helps when you're trying to skim through or using a screen reader and you want to get an idea of the content. Making sure that you've got a nice list of slide titles is really, really helpful. And people can choose the content they want to listen to. Again, the format and tips are no different to the ones we've just been through for kind of Word documents. They're very, very similar. So another dog for you, a dog looking quite grumpy at the camera, because I think when we start creating presentations, we often get a little bit caught up in, they must look pretty and I want to make them this colour and I want it to look like this, which, don't get me wrong, is good to do and it's good to design these things. But also just use a readable font. Be generous with these spacing. Don't use transitions that whirl me around and spin me around until I'm a bit dizzy. Keep it nice and simple. Keep your links short and descriptive. Make sure you're not using acronyms and jargon all of the time and explain what you're saying. And as we've said, make sure your slide titles are unique. I think I might keep saying that one until everybody around me knows what I mean. And finally, on presentations, don't use colour on its own to specify things. So if you're given a presentation, just be really mindful that people are going to be experiencing those slides in different ways. So on the slide, I have two circles. One is red and one is red with the letter A in the middle. So I want to avoid indicating with colour alone. So if you say something like highlighted in red is, not everyone will know what you're pointing to. Instead, say labelled with letter A and coloured in red. There may be some in the audience who are not viewing the screen at all. So send the slides in advance and give those short descriptions of that visual content. And that will help people navigate through that content in their own way. And finally, in our last kind of 5 minutes of this presentation, we're going to talk about spreadsheets, PDFs, and then we are finished. And spreadsheets, there isn't loads to kind of say on spreadsheets in terms of giving you some top tips. There are just some simple things you can do to help make your spreadsheets as accessible as they can be. And the first thing is index sheets and file names. If you've got several sheets in your workbook, and provide an index sheet at the start, so it's basically like a table of contents or a chapter list, and create links to those other worksheets. So tell the user what the workbook is about and provide that list of worksheets or contents which are inside that workbook. It's a really nice way just to kind of give a bit of an overview about what your spreadsheet covers and kind of the different data or sheets that you've got included in there. Use cell A1. So I've got a dog on this side with a hat on and a magnifying glass, looking a bit like Sherlock Holmes, I suppose, like a private investigator. And that's because I always look for cell A1 whenever I open up a spreadsheet. Cell A1 is an important cell and it should never be left blank. Cell A1 can give you a summary of your workbook. So it should be used for the title of the table, maybe, and then the kind of table will follow that. But just make sure you always put something in cell A1 so that it makes it really clear what that worksheet is going to be about. Name your sheets and name your tables. So the default most of the time for like spreadsheets is going to be like sheet 1, sheet 2. That's not really that helpful, is it? Doesn't tell me what that worksheet's about. So give the meaningful names. So make sure that you're making sure your worksheet, whatever that worksheet is about, you've given it a title that reflects that. It's also important, as we've spoken about in any application, if you're going to use a table, make sure it's actually a table. I think especially in kind of any spreadsheet software, it's really easy just to put stuff in columns and rows and not actually make it a fully structured table that's properly formatted. So just make sure you are actually using a proper table format if you are going to use a table in a spreadsheet. And finally, no blanking, no merging. So do not merge or split cells into an irregular pattern. I think we've heard that elsewhere, maybe, when we talked about Word docs and tables. Very similar in spreadsheets. Don't leave cells blank. Always put something in that cell. It might be a zero, could be a not applicable or empty. Whatever it is appropriate. Just don't leave any cells blank in the middle of a table. and delete any empty rows or columns. You don't want any space in there that's just sort of sitting empty. It doesn't work well when you're trying to navigate through with any kind of assistive tech. Makes life a little bit more difficult. So just make sure it's nice and neat and you've got rid of any of those empty rows or columns in your table. And finally, and to end, perfect PDFs. Or is that possible in the next 2 minutes? Probably not. But here's an introduction to a perfect PDF. So if you're going to talk PDF language, you've got to use the word tags. Tags are like labels that describe the structure and meaning of content. On this slide, I have a picture of a dog tag with the name Bella on it. That's the name of my dog. So I couldn't resist talking about tags and not put a dog tag with her name on it in there. But tags in a PDF work slightly differently, but they tell assistive technology what each part of that PDF is. So it could be a heading, paragraph, a list, table, and so on. Think of them as the kind of behind the scenes code that makes a PDF readable and navigable for everybody. So it's really important that we're using tags and we understand them. If you are using any kind of PDF software and you want to have a look at the tags, there's a screenshot on the slide to show how to get there. But if I was going to explain it, you go to the view menu, you say show and hide, navigation pane, and then accessibility tags. They're often turned on by default, but if you don't do a lot of PDF work, there might be a chance that they're not turned on. So that's how you find them if you haven't already used them before or know where they live. And as I said before, there are various different types of tag. And you will choose your type of tag depending on what kind of content it is. So if it's just paragraph text on the page, it gets a P tag for paragraph. If it's a heading, it will get an H1, H2, H3, depending on the level of heading. If it's a list, lists get a little bit more complicated because there are various different items within a list. So you have the main list, the list item, and you might have a label, which could be like your bullet point or your hyphen or your dash. And then you have your list body, which is then the little bit that follows that bullet point, which could be your text. Each part of that list gets given a tag. And that's where it gets a little bit more complex because they have to be nested within each other, et cetera, et cetera. But gives you an idea about how tags work. Images, of course, get a figure tag. And tables, again, kind of work similar to lists in that you get a table tag. And then each row, header, table data cell get individual tags as well. Don't worry too much about this. If PDF tagging and accessibility is new to you, this is very much an introduction to some of these things. But it gives you an idea into what goes into potentially creating an accessible PDF document. And I think creating accessible PDFs would be at least one other session, if not a few more, to kind of really get your head around tagging and how that works in the tag tree, as we call it, which is just your list of tags in your PDF document. If you are going to change your tags around in a PDF, you can change the order of them. You can drag and move them. You just need to check that they're in the right order when you're going through your PDF. Deleting empty tags is always a good top tip. You don't need empty tags, just get rid of them. It's very, very important that you still check for alternative text in a PDF document. Checking that content has got the right tag assigned to it, of course. And checking like headings, lists, tables, links, form fields, whatever you've got in there. Just double checking that the tags are correct because it doesn't always work when it's converted across. Not everything is going to potentially align nicely. So just walk through your tag tree, as we call it. So go down from top to bottom and double check that they're all assigned correctly. But you'll be glad to know that my presentation is nearly over. So just some final thoughts for you. And I'm sorry to throw that PDF stuff in at the end, and I don't mean to throw that in and leave everybody a bit mystified by it. But there's a lot to dig into, and I wanted to kind of cover the full spectrum of accessible documents today, which is why I've very gone top level with it. But as I say, if anybody wants to learn any more, I'm always happy to have a conversation. So I was going to leave you with some thoughts and a nice white dog winking at me on the camera, kind of giving me some top tips to remember. I'd leave you with the following. If you're creating any kind of document that is not for personal use, please test it and check it for accessibility. I don't care if 3 people are going to read that document. That's more than just you, so it needs to be accessible. Reducing two versions of things is not ideal. One accessible version only if possible, but that's not always possible, and we acknowledge that. So where that's not going to be possible for whatever reason, of course, producing two versions is the best next step. As you would do maybe if you were creating a product or service, test at every stage of development, making sure that from the moment you've started to write something in a document to the moment you press publish, you've tested it and check that it's accessible. And of course, with any kind of, I'm sure you've heard this many a time in webinars before, build in accessibility from the start. Get a template. Make sure everybody in your organization is working from an accessible template. Because if they are, it's going to save everybody a lot of time further down the road because you're building it in from the beginning. So that's what we try and do here. We try and get people working from templates, and that helps to build that consistency across the piece. But that is enough from me. I'm just going to thank you and hand over for any kind of questions or comments people might have. But thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Samantha. That was great. We do have quite a few questions, so I'm going to try and get through them kind of quickly. There's a few that were short, so I'll probably do those first. But for everyone, I am also going to look at upvotes. So if there's a specific question you want to make sure we ask, if you want to give that the thumbs up or the upvote in the QA panel, that will help. Someone had asked, what program are you using to view tags on the PDF in that screen share that you showed?
Adobe Acrobat Pro.
Okay. And is that typically what you would recommend for looking at the tags?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the one I've used most of the time. I don't have any experience using any other tools, so I guess I'm slightly biased, but it's the one that works for me and it kind of is quite clear. So, yeah.
Perfect. Another question that came in that's kind of short is, why do you recommend not using the title format instead of like heading formats in Word? I think this might also apply to Google Docs, which also has a title format.
Yeah, great question. A couple of reasons. One, it messes with your heading order. So title isn't recognized as a formalized heading. So in terms of looking at your navigation pane and the screen reader order, title isn't recognized in the same way a heading one is. So we don't use heading one. We don't use title at all. And we always start with a heading one because that gives us a nice structure to our document. If you're then going to also convert to PDF, title is not recognized in a heading order. There's no title tag. So again, heading one and making sure that it's marked as a heading one is the best way to make sure that heading order has good structure. We pretty much never use title. It doesn't work in our heading orders. So we avoid it completely, but great question.
Okay. Yeah. And Amber had a follow-up question, a different Amber, not me, about is there a time when using the title heading would ever be appropriate? Like, could you have that and a heading one or...
Yes. So I think the only instance I've ever seen it, and it is very particular for my area of work, but we create like reports and things that we publish, and there might be like a title page, which have the heading of the report or the title of the report. And then we'll also repeat that title maybe second page down when we're actually going into the body content. So that first title on our nice glossy title page would be title, as in formatted as a title. And then when we get into the main body copy and we repeat it again, it then becomes a heading one and it's part of our proper content. That is the only time I've ever really seen it used and it works is when you've kind of got that front page, but you know that content's repeated later on, so it's fine. It makes sense to just mark it as heading one. So I hope that kind of makes sense, but that's the only time I've ever seen it used successfully.
Yep, that does make sense. Jennifer had asked, are page headers and footers to be avoided, or do you have any thoughts about using page headers and footers?
I had a slide on this and I took it out because I was like, time is not going to allow. So I'm so glad you asked. Yes, so we don't use page headers or footers for any important content. So we say to our colleagues, use them for page numbers, use them for maybe content that's duplicated elsewhere in the document. But for things like version numbers, dates, author names, don't put anything in your header or your footer that you don't want it to be missed by a user. If you want to make sure people understand that information, it's like version numbers, super important. Everybody should know what version they're looking at or listening to. So make sure that content is in your body copy somewhere. Don't put it in your header or your footer.
So could it be like if you had the cover page like you were talking about and you had all that information there in the body? And then yeah. You're just repeating it on every page.
That's awesome.
Would that cause too much noise, or would you then like make it an artifact? If you were exporting to PDF, you'd just be like, this is an artifact, ignore it.
Exactly. It's repeated that. Content. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, if it's repeated, then we'll just artifact it when we convert it across. If you want on every page, you can do. It's no problem because you can do that and it reduces that noise, as you say.
Okay. Someone had asked, should the visual reading order match the order of the tags? In PDFs, I'm assuming, is what we're talking about.
Yeah. Most of the time, yes. I'm trying to think of an instance where that might not be appropriate. Because if you don't want something to appear in your reading order, you should have artifacted it anyway. So, yes, I would think most of the time your visual reading order should match your tag tree, absolutely. Otherwise, it's going to get a bit confusing if your tag order is different to how it visually appears on the page as well.
Okay. I love how concise you are. I think we're going to get through a lot of these, but there's 13, so we'll see. What problems do italics create?
Love that question. So we tend to don't use italics for anything. The only time I've ever used it is when I used to work in a scientific organization. We used it for like bacteria names and things like that, because that's how they're often read and recognized. The reason we don't is for dyslexic users most of the time. So anyone with dyslexia, sometimes with kind of the slanted letters that are all joined up, it can make texts more difficult to read. So we just try to avoid that altogether and make it as easy to read as possible.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So there's a question, and this one is probably not going to be as short. And I'm sure we can probably have you come back to talk more about PDFs. But this question in particular said, I'd love any thoughts on making fillable PDF forms accessible. This is from Daniel, who works at a college that loves those. Daniel says, I convert to web fill forms when possible, but sometimes it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is possible to create an accessible PDF form. It's not impossible. I'm glad to hear that you try the web form, because that would be always our first option. But failing that, PDF form is definitely second best. And absolutely. So it's kind of similar. So tagging is still really, really important. But you also have to make sure your form fields are properly labeled. Very much like you would in a web form, really. But there are mechanisms to do that in a PDF. So we can absolutely do another session on accessible forms if that would be really, really helpful. So I'm happy to do that at some point.
Yeah, I'll definitely follow up with you. I think that would be great. There was a question about alternatives to Adobe, but it sounds like you only use Adobe. And I also only use Adobe. So I don't know if either of us can answer that. But if anyone has one and they want to throw one in the chat for this person, I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah, please do.
Do you have another like 5 minutes or so to answer a few more questions?
Yeah, cool.
I know we're at time. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Antoine said, a customer of mine has a scientific paper website. They sometimes get images of graphs that include annotations or highlighted figures. This is inserted in a PDF. What would be the best solution, describing the whole graph and the highlights, or just the main goal of the graph, which are usually the highlights slash annotations?
Yeah, great question. And I'm going to be really awkward and say context dependent. So if you're using a graph and the information in that graph is only accessible via that image of that graph, then you need to provide some kind of long description to describe all of the information. I would not put that in your alternative text. I would include that as content on the page of where that graph is located. However, if the graph and what's in it has been described further on in the content or elsewhere in the document, then just a simple top level overview of that graph might be sufficient. So just depending on how you're using it and in what context will depend on what you then need to provide. But most of the time, you need an equitable experience, right? So if no one can get that information elsewhere, you need to make sure that description is there somewhere.
And if the description is in the content, I'm assuming in your alternative text, you could maybe even point them to say something like find description for figure, you know, under heading figure A or something like that.
Yeah. Describe further in the text, whatever is appropriate. Yeah. Just make sure that that's noted so someone knows. Okay, fine. I'll read about it further on.
Mm-hmm. Jean had said, and I do think you touched on this a little bit, so this might have come in before you've gotten there. Shouldn't an accessible digital document include cognitive disabilities as well? Things like font, leading, left justification, misuse of all caps, underlining text that is not a link.
So
do you have any extra?
I think you hit on things that I, again, had in but took out, but absolutely. So we tend to tell people about bold as well, because people often tend to use bold and they go a bit overbearing with their bold sometimes. So we try and tell people just use it where you really need to make sure the text also tells the story. But yeah, you hit on all the nails there. Left aligned, not justified text. That's really important as well. Making sure that, yeah, column format not ideal. So just trying to keep things in an easy to read format as well. Yeah, not underlining content that isn't links. And all caps, absolutely, we avoid those. It's just like you're shouting at somebody through the screen, which is not what we want to get across. So never advise that.
Yep. Christine says, I work in academia and students and professors tend to make academic posters in PowerPoint. What would be a more accessible tool for that?
Academic poster is an interesting one. Without looking at the content, it's hard to decide, but I would say we get people creating posters in like presentations and PowerPoint as well. We tend to try and convince them to use a Word document instead. They can do a lot of the same kind of visual stuff they can do in Word. But again, it depends how they're going to share them. So if they're going to share it as a PowerPoint, that's not the best idea. Word would definitely be the best one. If they're going to be printed out and put on a wall or something, of course, there's additional considerations to that. So again, yeah, hard to advise depending on how they're going to be used, but maybe Word, maybe potentially. But
you know, a thought I had is if it's a poster that's intended for print, then InDesign, which of course, I don't know if students and faculty, but to me, like InDesign is what you're supposed to be making designed graphics in. And I think that might export better than PowerPoint to an accessible PDF if you're providing that
some
as an alternative.
Funky things in InDesign if you want to do for a bit of a poster, but yeah.
Yeah. Maybe a follow-up on this as well with the design thing. Tony had asked, when you were saying not to use shapes in Word, does that include text boxes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So text boxes are treated the same as a rectangle that you might insert. So we don't use text boxes, we use borders. So yeah, text boxes or shapes are the same. But great question.
And you can add those borders just like if you highlight a paragraph and go up in some of the settings that already exist in Word, you can still design it in the same way.
It will look exactly the same. It just won't be embedded in a box. It'll just be text on a page. And visually, we'll have a nice board around it. But for someone using a screener, for example, there'll be no impact to their experience. It will just be like text on a page. So, yeah.
Whereas a text box would actually announce as like an image or a shape.
You'd have to add alt text and, yeah, all the things that go along with that.
That is good to know. Let's see. I'm trying to see if there's anything else we can get out. We're about at time. I think maybe some of these are like remediation and PDFs and that kind of stuff. Oh, there was one quick question. Do you have much experience with Apple Pages and how those export to PDFs?
No. I'm just going to hold my hand up and say no, I have no experience of that. Happy to trial it and test it with someone. Happy to explore, but have no experience I can share at the moment.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you coming. I do think we're definitely going to invite you back for a follow-up conversation, maybe to answer a lot of these questions about PDFs and remediation. And I know we have a few other people in the audience here who might be interested. So if you are interested in speaking, you can also contact us because we're always looking for speakers. Can you share, Samantha, the best place for people to follow up with you if they have additional questions that we didn't get answered today?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn. So just search my name. And you'll see me come up and feel free to message me through there. It's probably the best way to get in contact. And then I will get back in touch. And please do. It's lovely to hear from people. So always happy to connect with the accessibility community. So,
yeah. And it's Samantha Merritt, which is M-E-R-R-E-T-T for anyone who's searching you on LinkedIn.
Indeed.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you to everyone who came. And we'll be back here in about 2 weeks for another meetup. Bye.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Amber.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you found this episode valuable, please help us reach more people by subscribing, reviewing or liking the show, and sharing this with your colleagues. Accessibility Craft is a production of Equalize Digital, Inc. Steve Jones composed our theme music. To learn how Equalize Digital can support you on your accessibility journey, visit us at equalizedigital.com.